This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Troops leaving Syria. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, December 20th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has ordered all U.S. military forces out of Syria, but some Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill have expressed concern.
The Senate has approved a stopgap spending measure, but it does not include $5 billion in border wall funding.
The Federal Reserve announced its fourth rate hike this year, but indicates it will slow down the pace for next year.
And teen vaping has created a new generation of nicotine addicts with very few options to treat them.
There's so many teenagers now, about 20% of the high school population is vaping. And so a certain percentage of them, nobody really knows how many, have become addicted.
Wall Street Journal reporter Betsy McKay on the lack of treatment options for teens who've gotten addicted to nicotine through products like a Juul. President Trump has ordered a withdrawal of all U.S. military forces from Syria. The U.S. immediately began moving a handful of personnel from Syria yesterday and will quickly extract about 2,000 forces over the next few weeks, bringing to a close a four-year military campaign against Islamic State on the brink of its defeat.
We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
The plan drew criticism from both sides on Capitol Hill. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, an ally of the president.
To say they're defeated is an overstatement and is fake news. It is not true.
New Hampshire Democratic Senator Jean Shaheen.
It says you can't count on the United States because we may just pull out on you tomorrow if the president suddenly thinks it's in his interest, not in the United States' interest, but in his interest.
Some lawmakers compared the decision to former President Obama's decisions to scale back U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Senate has approved a stopgap spending measure that will keep the government open until February without President Trump's requested $5 billion for a border wall. While the White House indicated Mr. Trump was open to reviewing whatever Congress could pass, the president did not immediately weigh in on the short-term plan. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the Senate will remain in session today to see what the House does.
Even in the face of a great need to secure the border and following good faith efforts by the president's team, our Democratic colleagues rejected an extremely reasonable offer.
Meanwhile, Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, a leader of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, warned it will be tougher to win the money next year when Democrats control the House. Meanwhile, a disabled Iraq war veteran has started a GoFundMe to help pay for the project, and the fund skyrocketed to more than $2 million last night after being live for just 3 days. Retiring House Speaker Paul Ryan delivered his farewell address yesterday, lamenting the country's broken politics, as he called it, and partisan fights, but also praising the achievements of Congress during the 3 years he held the gavel.
It's just emotional pablum fed through a trough of outrage. It's exhausting. It saps meaning from our politics. And it discourages good people from pursuing public service.
Mr. Ryan's speech caps off a career that saw him rise from a budget-minded congressman to Mitt Romney's vice presidential pick in 2012 to the House Speaker.
I'm grateful to say goodbye to you, to this job, and to this incredible institution we call the House of Representatives.
He struggled to deal with gridlock on Capitol Hill, including Republican divisions over issues including health care and immigration. The 48-year-old Mr. Ryan acknowledges he never achieved two longtime policy dreams. One, reining in spending by Medicare and Social Security, and two, controlling the growing national debt.
It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday. The same remote desert border crossing used by a 7-year-old girl who recently died in government custody is seeing a surge in families and children that the Border Patrol is unequipped to handle. It's part of a problem that current and former Border Patrol agents say has been growing for years. An agency designed to deter and deport adults traveling alone to find work now spends most of its time dealing with vulnerable families who want asylum. It's a story by Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. Alicia, you've been to the border as much as anybody. What have you seen?
Basically, you have, you know, over 100,000 people traveling as families who have come across the Mexican border, crossing illegally in the last year. The numbers continue to surge, and Border Patrol stations and Border Patrol itself just isn't necessarily equipped to handle this. Border Patrol agents have a very specific job: see somebody cross the border or find them after they've crossed the border, stop them, arrest them, process them. Now what you have is people, instead of trying to sneak across and be surreptitious, they are coming in full sight of Border Patrol agents and walking right up to them. In the case of a group of 163 people last week, or earlier this month rather, in rural New Mexico, they walked around a port of entry in a place called Antelope Wells, and walked right up to a Border Patrol outpost. It's a forward operating base, and turned themselves in. There was no running or hiding. It was, hey, we're here, we'd like to ask for refuge or asylum in the U.S. And they're getting more and more of that, the sort of cross and surrender phenomenon. And Border Patrol stations are just not equipped for kids, mostly. They're built for single adults. They were built mostly with the intention of people being detained for a couple of hours at most, and by and large returned to Mexico. But you don't have Mexican migrants in the numbers that you did anymore. The overwhelming majority now are families and folks from Central America.
Boy, what struck me too was a comment from the chief of U.S. Border Patrol who said our border security mission basically is now a humanitarian mission.
Right. You know, again, you've got groups of 100 plus in the last 48 hours, 72 hours. You had, you know, 500 or so people traveling as families, that's an adult with at least one child, in addition to unaccompanied kids surrender themselves in rural New Mexico. That becomes humanitarian in her view, because now you've got to make sure that these kids have food and water. You have to stock your patrol stations with diapers. That's not something that had been done before.
Yeah.
As I've visited stations, you know, across the border from San Diego to Brownsville, that's what struck me most is there's a lot of diapers and a lot of formula and juice boxes, not things that I had seen in my previous iterations as a reporter covering the Mexican border.
Wait, what else is, what other adjustments are being made?
Well, they're having to drive people in some cases hours away from the border to get them either with ICE or to drop them off at bus stations as after they've been released. In the case of Yuma, Arizona, there's not a bus station. There's a bus stop with a bench, but buses passing through Yuma are coming from someplace on their way to someplace else, and this is not a major stop. So the Border Patrol has to drive these folks to Phoenix to make sure that they're not stuck in Yuma hoping for a spot on a bus. So they're spending hours driving back and forth. It's about a 200-mile drive each way.
Oh, goodness.
From Yuma to Phoenix. That's a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy spent making sure these folks get to, you know, a more palatable place for them to continue on with their trip after they've been processed by immigration authorities.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. Her piece is called Surge of Migrant Families Tests Border Patrol. Is there relief in sight?
That's a good question. It's unclear. You know, the Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, which oversees the Border Patrol, said they were surging agents and resources down to New Mexico, to Antelope Wells, where hundreds of people have been turning themselves in, as I said. But that place on the border, and it's just that, it's just a place. There's nothing around it, no infrastructure or resources. That's 90 miles from the nearest Border Patrol station, which is also in a fairly remote place in Lordsburg, New Mexico. So what they're trying to do is surge resources from within their own agency. They'll look at other agencies to see if there's other help. They've not ruled out Department of Defense assistance, though that has also not been requested.
It's Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. She says last month, nearly 59% of people arrested at the border were families or unaccompanied children. Just 6 years ago, nearly 90% were single adults, primarily from Mexico. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, against the advice of many in his own administration, President Trump is pulling U.S. troops out of Syria. The U.S. immediately began moving a handful of personnel from Syria and will extract about 2,000 forces over the next few weeks, sending a four-year military campaign against Islamic State.
Our boys, our young women, our men, they're all coming back. And they're coming back now. We won. And that's the way we want it. And that's the way they want it.
Some lawmakers are criticizing the move. Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware says a withdrawal will give enemies an opportunity to infiltrate a weakened nation.
Giving both Russia and Iran a much broader footprint in Syria, right next door to Israel, in a region where further Iranian aggression is not in our interest, I think is profoundly unwise.
Some State Department and military personnel are urging Trump to reconsider. The Senate has approved a stopgap spending measure that will keep the government open until February without $5 billion for a border wall. The measure now goes to the House. House Minority Whip Steny Hoyer spoke with Fox.
We're just punting the ball down the road a little bit. Nothing is solved. We're just delaying the decision.
While the White House indicated Trump is open to reviewing whatever Congress could pass, the president did not weigh in on the short-term plan. Stocks gave up a rally and closed sharply lower after the Federal Reserve raised its key interest rate for a fourth time this year and said it plans two more increases next year. The Dow Industrials dropped 352, sending the market to its lowest level since September of 2017. Yep, the numbers on the scale keep going up. The National Center for Health Statistics says waistlines have ballooned in the 21st century. In general, women's waists grew more than 2 inches, while men's middles increased just over 1 inch. The health implications are worse for women. Women who carry more weight around their middles have a 10 to 20% greater risk of heart attack than women who are just heavier overall.
Man, that's some serious numbers.
I know, it's really scary. Oh. We sit way too much.
We do. Be like Jen. How many days a week you work out?
Six.
Yeah, minimum five. Some days toss in the six. 23 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. America is having a cheese problem, and it could get worse. About 1.4 billion pounds of American cheddar and other kinds of cheese is socked away at cold storage warehouses across the country, the biggest stockpile since federal record keeping began. We're simply not selling as much. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. Heather, what's up here?
So we have a record amount of cheese in cold storage, which is warehouses that store cheese when producers can't sell it immediately. So this is the most since records have been kept by the USDA, so going back about 100 years. So it's quite a buildup of cheese. So there's a number of dynamics that are at play here. One of the big ones, of course, is the tariffs and the trade barriers that were erected between the U.S. and China and Mexico, primarily because of the steel duties, but that has also impacted lots of agricultural companies that try to export their goods and really rely on exports to do their business and to turn the volumes of products they produce. And cheese is a big one, particularly with Mexico. So those trade duties really have hurt producers. They expected to move much more cheese out of the U.S. to Mexico than they have.
Wow. So this the cheese that's being stockpiled right now, say in these refrigerators or freezers, it has shelf life?
It does. And what a lot of these companies try to do is to, if they can't find a grocery store or somewhere else or a restaurant company to buy it, they will actually put it out on the spot market, the exchanges. So that's in part what they do when they're storing this cheese, is that they can sell it for a lower cost on spot markets for quite a bit of time after it's initially produced. But of course, cheese doesn't last forever, so eventually they really have to find a market for it or just not sell it.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. Her piece is called America Can't Move Its Cheese. This company based in Ireland, is it Glanbia? They've got this, they're building a plant in Michigan. Explain what's going on there.
So the these plants are built, you know, they take years and years to build, and the companies I talked to still expect demand to be strong, and it is strong in general. Americans are actually consuming a record amount of cheese. But obviously the trade barriers have really put a pinch on things, but they are still going ahead planning to build this quite large facility in Michigan that will process millions and millions of tons of cheese a year. But part of this will be for the U.S. market, but also part of it will be for export. And these companies really are seeing the world as their potential customers now.
Thanks, Heather. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday, December 20th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump has ordered U.S. troops out of Syria and is getting mixed reaction. The Senate passed a stopgap funding measure, but it does not have $5 billion for a border wall. One of the busiest travel days of the year today, and rain could disrupt things. Pinterest is reportedly preparing for an IPO, possibly in April. The Rockets hit a record 26 three-pointers last night in a win over the Wizards. And the Massachusetts city that outsiders still can't pronounce properly. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Dell Small Business Advisors can help you maximize this year's budget and find the right business PC with 8th Gen Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Teenage use of e-cigarettes has soared over the past year, thanks largely to Juul, whose sales have skyrocketed since the middle of last year. Now, parents and medical professionals are struggling to help addicted adolescents kick the nicotine habit. Addiction experts report a surge in calls in recent months from worried parents, as well as pediatricians who are not sure what to do. More from Betsy McKay, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal. Betsy, how bad are things?
Well, you know, there's so many teenagers now, about 20% of the high school population is vaping. And so a certain percentage of them, nobody really knows how many, have become addicted. These e-cigarettes that are popular with teens have lots of nicotine and can be consumed pretty quickly. So, and the answer that we found is that there are very few options for teenagers for a number of reasons.
Boy, go through some of the basics here first, because what I did not realize is that, let's say, one pod for your Juul has the same amount of nicotine as a pack of cigarettes?
That's right. A Juul pod has about the same amount of nicotine as a pack of cigarettes. I interviewed a young man who was using about 4 Juul pods a day. That means the equivalent of smoking 4 packs of cigarettes. I think what these teens have found and their parents have found is that, you know, it's much easier to vape large amounts of nicotine than it is to smoke cigarettes. It's a bit challenging to go through 4 packs of cigarettes in a day, much less challenging, much easier to go through 4 pods.
Mm. I guess this is kind of a simpleton type question, but how long does a pod last? There's a certain number of drags or something that it takes to get through one?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how much you use it. So a lot of people say they'll go through a pod a day. That seems to be normal. But it does depend on the number of drags you take from it. Clearly, a lot of these kids are using it a lot more. And, you know, those like the young man I interviewed who've become actually addicted and can't put it down, you know, need it all the time, they can go through a lot in a day, and they don't have the, you know, the throat burn or the other irritants that you get from smoking, so there's kind of nothing to slow you down, right, is what they and their parents have said. So then the concern is, you know, when you have a teen addicted to nicotine, the other issue I should step back and say here is that nicotine is very addictive for everyone, but particularly for teens. They can get addicted with fewer exposures. Mm. It's, you know, nicotine can wire their developing brains in a way that makes them more vulnerable to addiction. So you've sort of got this perfect storm going on.
We're speaking with Betsy McKay, yes, Wall Street Journal senior writer. She's got a piece called Teen Vaping Has Created Addicts with Few Treatment Options. So once you're in desperation mode here, where do you turn to help your teenager?
You know, I spent a long time talking to one mom who spent several months trying to do this. She, you know, she did a lot of research on the internet and looked for a treatment program and looked for counseling help. Basically, what you need to do is first talk to your pediatrician. You know, her experience was that the pediatricians didn't know a lot yet, but more is known about Juul now. There's more awareness, so they should have an idea. Look for symptoms, and, you know, parents need to look for symptoms in their kids, like that they have a Juul around, they can't seem to put it down, they're vaping a lot. And, you know, beyond that, mental health professionals, counselors, for teens who are, you know, have really serious issues, there are a few addiction treatment centers around the country. We list some in our story, along with other resources. So it's not easy, but it, you know, some have shown that it can be done, and it's a process. And you know, the trick is, of course, the difficult thing rather, is that these products are everywhere among kids this age. So it takes a lot to quit and stay away from them when all your friends around you are doing this.
It's Wall Street Journal senior writer Betsy McKay. Meanwhile, Altria Group is nearing a deal to take a 35% stake in Juul Labs at roughly $38 billion valuation. The Wall Street Journal says the $12.8 billion cash injection could be announced as soon as this week. It would more than double what Juul was valued at just a few months ago. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us on this Friday eve. State and local officials across the U.S. are scrambling to regulate the fast-growing electric scooter industry, and in some cases banning the two-wheeled devices until laws can be crafted. About a year after startups like Bird Rides and Lime began spreading them around the country, sometimes without warning or without seeking prior approval, thousands of scooters can be rented by the minute in dozens of cities and on many college campuses. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert. Scott, what's happening?
In just a little bit more than a year, you know, we went from having basically none of these to thousands of them in dozens of cities and on lots of college campuses. And, you know, many of your listeners will have seen these. You know, you stand on them, and they're, you know, they're little gizmos, but you stand on them, and there's an electric motor, and you can sort of zip around town, going up to 15 miles per hour. And the issue is that, you know, a lot of cities and states were sort of caught off guard because oftentimes these companies will just appear unannounced with a whole bunch of scooters. You know, they'll just put dozens or hundreds of scooters around a town or on a college campus. People start using them, and there's literally no regulatory framework or laws that, you know, specifically address these devices. And so what cities and states have both been doing is racing to catch up.
Mm. So you can basically, with these things, like, are they free to use in some cases promotionally, I guess, or you can swipe a credit card, right, and just drop the thing off any old place, right?
Right. I mean, they're dockless, so they don't have a station. And basically, you know, you use a smartphone to sort of unlock it. And oftentimes, generally speaking, it's like a dollar to start riding and then like 15 cents a minute. And then when you're done, you just, you know, get off the thing and I guess lock it and go on about your way. And then the theory is, you know, somebody else will come along and see that scooter and hop on and ride to someplace else. And that's how it works.
Yeah. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert. How do cities hope to regulate them? Like,
keep them on sidewalks or don't leave them where people can trip over them or create a lane and a street for them? What do they want?
Right. Well, it's interesting because, you know, if you talk to these city officials around the country, you know, they'll say on the one hand they like the idea of these scooters because they are an inexpensive sort of eco-friendly means of transportation. There, you hear a lot of talk about, you know, the last mile. So maybe somebody, you know, gets off a subway or something and they still have a ways to go. The scooter can be a good option for that. It's also good in places where there's just not great public transit. And that can include, you know, lower income neighborhoods where people might have a hard time getting to work or school. But, you know, at the same time, they want to ensure that there is, that public safety is not compromised. Yeah. And it's challenging because, you know, essentially, by and large, the cities don't want you riding on the sidewalk because you can collide with pedestrians, obviously. And again, you know, if you're going 15 miles an hour, that may not sound like a lot, but if you crash into somebody who's just strolling along the sidewalk, that can be bad for both you and the person you crash into.
Yeah.
And so they're trying generally to get people to ride in, you know, bike lanes where they're available. But, you know, in a lot of cases, there aren't good bike lanes. And so the problem is that riders, scooter riders, don't necessarily want to go into the street. And, you know, the other thing to point out is that people, by and large, don't wear helmets, even though the scooter companies really encourage that and all of that. But so it's a tricky situation. And then to your point about you know, cluttering sidewalks, you know, they want to make sure that people park these things in a way that won't get in the way of people who are trying to use the sidewalks. And that can include people who are in wheelchairs and might find an obstruction that they can't get around. So, you know, but what the sort of elephant in the room is, how do you enforce this? Because, you know, people are going to do what they feel most comfortable doing unless there's some good reason not to. And so if you don't have people out there, like police officers, who obviously have a lot on their plates, issuing citations, it's hard to know whether these regulations are going to be followed.
Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert. It's 11 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us and welcome aboard. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to North Korea said today it will never unilaterally give up its nuclear weapons unless the U.S. first removes what Pyongyang called a nuclear threat. The surprisingly blunt statement jars with Seoul's more rosy presentation of the North Korean position and could rattle the already fragile diplomacy between Washington, Seoul, and Pyongyang to defuse a nuclear crisis that last year had many fearing war. Stocks gave up an early rally and took a dive in afternoon trading after the Federal Reserve raised interest rates again and said it plans to keep raising them next year, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell.
We know that our policy decisions affect all American families and businesses, and we'll continue to make our decisions objectively and based solely on the best information and analysis.
The Fed's announcement didn't appear to go as far as some investors had hoped in signaling a sharper slowdown in its credit tightening policies. The Dow Industrials dropped 352. The U.S. population grew in the past year at its slowest rate in over eight decades, with growth in the South and West continuing to outpace the Northeast and Midwest. The Census Bureau says the country's population rose by 0.6% to 327.2 million people. That was the lowest rate since 1937. The figures offer fresh clues to which states are likely to gain or lose congressional seats after the 2020 census. Texas would gain two House seats, while Arizona, Florida, Colorado, North Carolina, and Oregon would each gain one. States losing a seat would be Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and West Virginia. Thousands of passengers were delayed, diverted, or stuck on planes as the only runway at Britain's Gatwick Airport remained closed into a second day after drones were spotted over the airfield. Britain's second busiest airport closed its runway last evening after two drones were spotted. It reopened briefly at about 3 a.m., but shut 45 minutes later after additional sightings. Major League Baseball and the sports governing body in Cuba have struck a historic deal that will allow players from the island to play in the big leagues without having to defect. Under the agreement, Cuban players who are at least 25 and have played 6 years in that country's domestic league will be free to sign with an MLB team that will pay a release fee to the Cuban club.
Why don't they just create their own team and just win the World Series every year?
They probably would.
Just keep them all home. Enter Major League Baseball as the Cuban something or others.
Major League Baseball's got to be thrilled about this.
Right. Agreed. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The city of Worcester, Massachusetts is shaking off decades of post-industrial rust with help from downtown revival efforts, a restaurant scene, and soon a minor league baseball team. There's one thing, though, Worcester can't shake, and that's the letter H. The Wall Street Journal says from government to newspapers to visitors, people won't stop calling New England's second largest city Worcester. For the record, the name is correctly pronounced with just two syllables, not three. It sounds like Worcester. And locals with a New England accent will also accept Worcester. There's no correct version with some CH sound in there. The city has been around for about 300 years. It's named after the much older English city. The mistake with the CH likely comes from English cities with names like Manchester or Winchester. Locals try to keep a sense of humor about the constant barrage of mistakes. Bill Wallace, director at the Worcester Historical Museum, jokes, "The line around here is just get the H out of Worcester." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.